Uploading the virus.
Eagle One, the package is being delivered.
Hello out there on the internet. I am Matthew Galt, and this is Cyber. All right, I'm sorry we have to talk about Elon Musk. We have a lot of fun on the show and on Motherboard at Musk's expense, and whatever he's doing on Twitter certainly looks like the weird flailing of a man who doesn't know how to run a company. But just for the next hour, let's set all that aside and take Musk seriously. He is the richest man in the world. He has big dreams and some of the resources to achieve them. The Pentagon is paying him for rocket launches. Starlink works and has been instrumental in the war in Ukraine. So let's go back to basics. Who is Musk? Why do we care about him so much? His detractors see him only as a shit poster who's, you know, made some great business bets. His fans see him as this messianic figure, a superhero who will lead us into a new golden age of technology. What's the truth? Is it somewhere in between? Is the answer that simple? Well, here to help me figure all this out is Motherboard Managing Editor Jordan Pearson. Jordan, thank you so much for coming onto the show today.
Of course.
All right, so is it fair to say, maybe fascinated is the wrong word, but that you are interested in Elon Musk?
Yeah, I think, I mean, somewhat involuntarily, like most of us, I think, you know, we're all forced to not just be aware of him, but to sort of be along for the ride just by virtue of his wealth and his business endeavors. And of course, now his purchase of Twitter is just one more sort of tendril in our lives. So, yeah, I mean, like, probably not fascinated, although I think he is fascinating in a sense, but you know, he wields so much power, and the companies that he runs are doing interesting is probably not quite the right word, although it is very interesting, but like, you know, important stuff that we have to talk about him basically. And on top of all of that, he is a shit poster. And he is like a very flawed person, obviously. And yeah, all of that gives plenty of fodder for, reporting and, you know, to a certain degree theorizing, because we can't really know what's inside his mind. What's really going on here.
So let's get some new stuff out of the way right at the top. Some things have happened since the last time we talked about Twitter and about Musk. So you brought back Trump. What's going on? They're bringing people back.
Yeah, I mean, with Trump, like, I see, like, Elon's purchase of Twitter. I mean, first, we should be clear that he didn't want to buy the company. You know, he actually, like, on the day that he was laying people off, he spoke at an investment conference and was like, look, I didn't want to buy it. I overpaid for it, but here we are. Yeah, I mean, we've all seen kind of like the mess that he's made so far, like of Twitter and the Trump thing. It's kind of indicative of his very chaotic approach to Twitter and probably to a certain extent many other things in his business life, let's say. Because, you know, when he started taking control of Twitter, he was saying, you know, we're going to have a content moderation council. They're going to make big decisions, and kind of the Trump decision was sort of implied in that. And then we can kind of see how that was like sort of just shoved away when he ran a Twitter poll and then sort of pretended that that was some kind of authoritative ruling on the topic and then reinstated Trump. And it's kind of hard not, I mean, I'm sure to a certain extent he sees it as being part of his free speech mission with Twitter, or like, you know, his supposed free speech mission. But I think probably there is a part of him that also sees it as being a play for engagement. And, you know, Trump is a huge poster, kind of like a mega Twitter user, for better or for worse, at the time he was on Twitter. So, I mean, it is kind of just a little sad because it does seem like flailing to just bring back Trump like that. And of course, Trump hasn't tweeted.
Yeah, that's my favorite part. And I think objectively, like, the funniest outcome is if he just didn't come back.
Yeah, I mean, why would he? Like, you know, the number one draw on Truth Social is Trump posts. So to put that on Twitter is just, you know, I don't see why he would do that. And Elon reinstating him just, you know, it does seem a little desperate.
The other thing I want to hit here are the employees. How many people are left at Twitter? It feels like every day I hear a different story about people being fired, weird emails being sent. What's the latest?
Well, I think the last thing that I heard was, like, Twitter has under 3,000 employees that are left, and they have to send an email update at the end of every Friday, just saying what they're working on, which is, like, absurd. Like, these are, like, that, you know, hundreds or thousands of people that are, like, sending an email saying, here's what I'm doing. Like, clearly no one is really picking up on that on any detail. It's just like, you know, did you send the email? Are you, like, passing this sort of, you know, perception of productiveness that we're going for here? And we also saw Musk tweet over the weekend that he was having kind of an all-nighter. Basically, it's seemingly just kind of learning how Twitter works. He called it a code review, but it really, just based on the photos, kind of seemed more like people sitting him down and really just explaining, like, okay, this is how the nuts and bolts of the service actually work. Like, it's not just like you enter things into a box and they magically go online and it's all super easy. But yeah, I mean, there are people left at Twitter. It seems like a lot of people are worried that potentially not enough people to really keep the site running are there. I don't really know if that's true or not. But it definitely seems like kind of a skeleton crew in a sense, with a lot of, like, power and authority being essentially concentrated in Musk. And he's sort of, you know, running this, like, a little fiefdom, which we've seen with his previous companies and his management style, which, by the way, based on the number of, like, lawsuits and complaints that we've seen at his other companies, doesn't seem like it results in a very nice place to work. So I think we can say that about it.
All right. Now let's get to, I think, the big question I want to talk about for the rest of the show. This is a guy who said he wanted to inspire humanity to travel to Mars and to explore space. He wanted to grow green things on the surface of the red planet. And he is working towards that. You know, the rockets are real. The Pentagon contracts are real. How do we get that guy to be flailing on, how do we get into this world where that guy is also now flailing on Twitter and getting hurt that Trent Reznor left? Mm-hmm. Like, why is this why?
Well, this is what makes Elon Musk kind of worth thinking about as, like, an entity, in business and in geopolitics, and of course a Twitter user. I mean, Elon Musk is obviously, he's a huge nerd, kind of like the typical, like, Redditor, like, early in, like, 2000s rationalist internet user, referencing, like, you know, Rocco's Basilisk is how he found his, you know, previous partner Grimes, bonding over that sort of thing.
Wait, I gotta put a pause. For the people who don't know, can you explain the Rocco's Basilisk thing and, like, how it's tied into, like, early Reddit atheists?
Yeah, so Rocco's Basilisk was a post that was made on a forum called Less Wrong, which is kind of like an early 2000s, like, rationalist sort of, like, tech-aligned, free-thinking type forum. And the idea is basically, like, you know, a super powerful AI in the future may not come back, but, like, have influence in time travel and, like, punish people who didn't bring it into being or force them to work to bring it into being. So it's just this, like, thought experiment that kind of speaks to a lot of things that Musk clearly finds interesting and sort of animate his philosophy, specifically this idea of, like, long-termism and existential risk to humanity, which he talks about a lot. And you can see kind of reflected in his focus on, like, population and even like in being an interplanetary species. But anyway, so, but this also goes back to like the sort of like cultural milieu it comes from, which is like very nerdy, interested in sci-fi, kind of rationalist online, what we might call today like a typical Redditor type person. So that's where Rockus Basilisk comes from. And yeah, he bonded with Grimes over that because they essentially both made kind of a very low effort joke about it. Something like Rococo Basilisk was the joke, I think. But that's the story behind that.
Okay, sorry, I derailed you, but like this is kind of the personality outline for his whole, like, it kind of, I don't want to say it explains him, but it explains his posting style.
Yeah. And like, you know, the other part of just like in terms of his personality, like we're not even talking about like his business or like what function he serves in like geopolitics or like American business, but like he's clearly addicted to Twitter, like in an unhealthy way. There was a tweet recently from a VC friend of Musk that like was supposedly like a friendly thread, but really, you know, it sort of outed him as like an avid close-up music magician, and like someone who like maybe doesn't have a lot of close friends, but is like traveling around a lot and meeting people and having meetings. And so you kind of have this like image of like the like brain poisoned person with poster's disease, who, you know, clearly like any poster who posts on Twitter a lot seeks validation from a large crowd of people. And I mean, he's flawed. Like we see it every day on Twitter. Like he's clearly having a meltdown, like while all of this is going on and like posting through it. And that is a really interesting part of his personality, because we can look at his business decisions. So, I mean, we can talk about SpaceX and Tesla as probably the two like successful things that he's done. I mean, SpaceX undoubtedly successful, Tesla obviously right now not doing so well in terms of stock price. But what he has really excelled at in the past is to kind of tap into geopolitical currents and trends in the US specifically and in the West, and kind of be like, put his hand up and be like, I'll be the guy. So, you know, with SpaceX, the company emerged at a time where there were, like, this is the early 2000s, there were like increasing tensions between like Russia and the US. And there was already this question forming of like, you know, we can't use Russian rockets forever.
Yeah, this is important because one of the only companies that was manufacturing booster rockets at the time that everyone was using was in Russia, right? Mm-hmm. Like no one else was doing it. So you had to deal with them.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Musk's insight there is just to be like, you know, I'll put my hand up and I'll be the guy to be America's rocket guy. Like, I'll do it. And the government, you know, gave him tons of grants. Like, this is the other thing is like he kind of poses as someone who is like maybe anti-authority to a degree, but his biggest successes have kind of been riding these currents of American and Western interests and priorities, including electric cars. Because obviously, you know, SpaceX has gotten so many government grants over the years. Like before it even launched a rocket, it was getting millions of dollars in grants. And now, of course, it has like billions of dollars in contracts because it's, you know, bringing America to the moon and in his mind, probably beyond. But Tesla also has benefited greatly from government programs in terms of like being able to sell environmental credits to other car makers, and, you know, really kind of like pad its balance sheet in that way. And of course, like also subsidies to customers for buying their cars sort of allowed them to cement themselves in the industry. So in both cases here with, you know, wanting to reduce reliance on Russian rockets and wanting to increase electric cars, you see Musk has been the guy to sort of put his hand up and say, and really go for it and sort of reap the benefits from government and society along the way. And we can look at his other things that have been much less successful. Of course, like, you know, we can talk about Hyperloop or the Boring Company or even the Twitter deal. And we can kind of see the cracks in this image of him as someone who is like omniscient and like extremely brilliant. Because the things that we know him for as being extremely successful essentially align with the priorities of, like, to put it flatly, like America as a nation in the world. And his major failures so far have been kind of his like outlandish ideas like that come from himself that aren't just like necessarily facing government priorities that are sort of already happening. I mean, to his credit, he was early to all of these things. You know, he clearly has an eye for opportunity. And so far, his greatest opportunities have been to insert himself into, for example, America's geopolitical needs with rockets and its climate goals with electrification and vehicles. So, I mean, all of this is obviously extremely interesting and important to discuss in terms of what function does Musk serve, in addition to the unmitigated chaos that like his personality brings to the entire equation.
I have a lot of questions. Just one as a comment, like, I think you see that dichotomy between the big swings for personal reasons and kind of seeing trends and seizing a moment, even at the very beginning, right? Because you have, he made video games that nobody played like a long time ago. And at the same time, like, gets in on PayPal real early, recognizes the opportunity there, and that helps build his fortune. Right. Yeah. You said that he serves a function. Can you elaborate on that? What function does Elon Musk serve?
Well, I mean, we've seen like in the, like over the last few decades in America, like a push towards privatization in general and sort of the valorization of private capital in doing things that the government used to do. And specifically to America's benefit, or like the benefit of the nation. Like, America has goals in space that are American goals. They're not goals for the benefit of the entire world necessarily. Like, America wants to own the commercial space. Like, you know, like the space of like commercial space. America wants to be at the forefront of that. And that kind of discussion has been going on for a very long time. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about like the role that the Obama administration played in sort of boosting SpaceX, which by that point around like 2010 or 2011 had already sort of like been ingratiated to the government, gotten tons of grants, and sort of positioned itself as being like a private company that can build rockets and really pull this off. But what Obama did in the Obama administration, which itself was very deferential to Silicon Valley and big tech and sort of that whole wave of American capital, like, he ended NASA's crewed space program essentially, and SpaceX was ready to step into that. So by function, I guess I just mean that, you know, he's been willing to put his hand up and take risks to sort of throw himself into the gap and do these things that are sort of already in the ether or on the horizon and reap the benefits in doing that.
All right, cyber listeners, we're going to pause there for a break. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsor. If you're watching the live stream, there are no ads.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's AURA.com/safety.
All right, cyber listeners, welcome back. We are talking to Jordan Pearson about Elon Musk. I want to highlight, too, that Musk often throws his hand up, as you say, but then also becomes the face of these things when he is not always necessarily the only person doing it or even necessarily the best, right? Like electric cars, he on the forefront of it, but other people, like the competition is coming. And in a lot of ways, it's already here. Rockets as well. Other companies, and it's in fact built into the way the Pentagon has set up contracts for rockets, is that there has to be competition. There has to be other people other than Musk who are shooting rockets into space. And it's, I'm going to screw up the name of the company, but it's a partnership between Lockheed Martin and another one of the defense companies is like Musk's biggest competitor, which is why sometimes Musk makes fun of the guys on Twitter and yells at them for having government contracts, the same ones that Musk does. He sets himself up in a way to be the guy that also takes the fall and takes the criticism for these projects. Like, no one's talking about rockets that aren't SpaceX or Jeff Bezos, right? Even though defense companies are quietly working on it all the time. Is that another function he serves in our public discourse, to be the fall guy willingly?
I don't know if he sets himself up to be the fall guy. I mean, I think he probably hopes he never will fail. Like, I think he sets himself up to be the public face of these things because being a showman and being a salesperson for himself and the stock of his own companies is a big part of what he does. Like when you look at like Tesla stock, for example, this is a good example of this. So Tesla stock is plunging right now. And it really doesn't have much to do with Tesla. It's because of his nonsense over at Twitter. Of course, he has some Tesla shares on the line for the Twitter deal as well. But I think it just shows like how Tesla stock in particular, which is the only publicly traded stock in his portfolio, is kind of a barometer for him. So, you know, his like sort of cult of personality and the image that he puts out there for himself and of his companies it's instrumental to the stock price and to his sort of continued success. Like, he is really sort of brute forcing his way through all of this through an attempted, I don't want to say charm offensive, because I think the charm is often quite lacking, but through like, in terms of the promotion, like, you know, like pure showmanship and like bluster. And we've seen how that like sort of overreached with the Twitter deal, because, you know, by his own admission, like he didn't really like want to buy it by the end of the process and overpaid for it. And like, you know, maybe that initial offer, we don't know, but maybe that initial offer was basically just, you know, him trying to like talk a big game for himself yet again. But this time, it's sort of failed, but his function as being kind of like a promoter, as being as much of a part of his job as being, maybe even more of a part of his job as than being, you know, someone who makes business deals or someone who's an engineer, you know, that is as much of a part of the Musk equation as anything else. And might even be at this point, now that he's established these companies and he's really just trying to make it work and boost the stock price, maybe even be the most important part of the Musk equation. And part of the entertainment with the whole Twitter thing is we're seeing that very publicly, you know, crumble, because he's having a meltdown essentially in his tweets. So, and that's affecting the Tesla stock. You know, he's a salesperson.
Quickly, is the United Launch Alliance is the SpaceX competitor, which is Boeing and Lockheed. Just wanted to get that out of the way.
Right.
All right. So a couple things. One, I would observe that like a big blustering showman business guy is part of the whole American deal, right? Like we, our history is full of those people. We often idolize them. We set them up. You learn about them in history class, right? I think the version would maybe be the Tesla rival. I can't remember his name. Edison. Good Lord. That's sad. Mm. On a live stream too. Edison, obviously. The other thing I think is fascinating about this conversation is that this is Musk is a guy that when he does something like go on Joe Rogan and smoke weed, when he does something like publicly tweet through a bad business deal, people lose money. The government launches investigations. This is a guy that lives in the public space, and every single one of his actions seems to have enormous consequences. What do you make of all of that?
I mean, you're right. Like, I think part of what's at war in Musk all the time is like this side of him that is very chaotic and craving validation and attention. And part of that is like a very real business need for him to sort of gather all the attention around himself and promote his companies that way. But I think he's just, you know, the other part of it is the function that he serves in terms of geopolitics and the priorities of the American economy and the American government in terms of space and electrification. I think he feels probably very comfortable right now. Like, he probably feels that with SpaceX, at least, like, he grasps the deal. Like, he's no dummy. Like, he knows that SpaceX is in the position it is right now because America needs a vertically integrated space company that is making American rockets in America for America. And that is a very big thing. And SpaceX managed to do that through, you know, its connections with people in government and for getting grants over the years and this type of thing. So it's a really sort of interesting and chaotic interplay of like the sort of like very like, and both of these things are very American, even if they seem contradictory. It's like, on the one hand, you have this like blustery salesperson who's like, you know, egotistical and like sort of narcissistically sucking all the air out of the room to boost his stock price and his projects. And on the other hand, in the same person, you have this person who's like, you know, performing an extremely valuable function for the American state at the current moment.
Yeah. Powerful people are watching Musk and are conflicted, I'm sure. But like, I think the SpaceX and Starlink are the ones that are really important. It's like the news cycle moves so fast that we've almost forgotten, I think, that, you know, he decided to dip his toe into the Ukraine war and do whatever the fuck he was doing back then. But I do want to talk about real quick the problems that SpaceX solves. And I think it's a part of the American military that we don't talk about a lot that is, I think, probably the thing that makes it the most powerful. And it's not interesting or sexy at all. It's logistics. SpaceX, for the Pentagon, is not about getting, I mean, to a certain extent, it is about like putting weapons in space eventually, right? But like, near-term goal is it's about using rockets to move cargo very quickly. It is about being able to ship like an Abrams tank or food across the planet as quickly as possible. And like, we've seen the contracts, like that is what they're actually working on. That's what's been awarded. That's what they're talking about doing. They're talking about like, you know, instant shipping of military supplies with SpaceX rockets. Right. And in addition to that, you have this satellite communication system that is essentially getting beta tested as a form of battlefield communication in the war in Ukraine. Sorry, everybody, I've got a cat that needs to move. There we go. And I think this is a big part of why the military like can't quit him, right? No matter how much weed he smokes on Joe Rogan or how much wild shit he says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're completely right on that. Like, at the present moment, the function that SpaceX serves for the American state seems important enough that we can suffer, the chaos he causes elsewhere. I mean, you know, it's interesting because like Tesla is the same way. Like it's a vertically integrated company. And he seems to like apply this technique or this logic across multiple companies where it's like, you know, we're going to do this thing that rides the wave of current priorities in the West, and we're going to vertically integrate it and build it and sell it in the West. Like, he opened a Shanghai factory in 2019 for Tesla, but the majority of Tesla's factories and employees are in the States and Europe. So, I mean, it's not a coincidence that his strategy is, like, glom onto a Western priority, siphon away those government benefits, and vertically integrate it in the West as much as you can. And yeah, like I think like at the current moment, like this is like the key tension with Musk and like why he's still such a big part of the public discussion is like, you know, obviously he's bought Twitter and it's a huge mess and it's really entertaining and what's going to happen. But it's SpaceX specifically, to a lesser degree Tesla, but definitely SpaceX, that is keeping him in the game, so to speak.
Tekagul has a really good question that's been on my mind a lot lately. Sure, but how long will these relatively conservative institutions bear his antics? Will his precarious finances be a turning point? I would just point to, I've got two data points on this, and then I want to hear your thoughts, Jordan. First, I would say that when he smoked weed on Joe Rogan, Pentagon launched investigations because they wanted to know, you know, if your CEO is smoking weed on a podcast, like what's the culture like at SpaceX? $5 million audit that, guess who paid for it? American taxpayer. They paid that $5 million to do a cultural review of SpaceX because he smoked. Stupid, but that was one of the consequences. The other one more recently is him getting pretty wild about Starlink and the war in Ukraine. After he had said that he was no longer going to be footing the bill for some of it, CNN acquired some documents from the Pentagon that showed some of their contracts with Starlink and even got some on-background quotes about how the Pentagon had actually been footing the bill for a lot of this and how they were pretty upset about the way that he was talking about Starlink and Ukraine in public. So we have seen these moments of pushback from these conservative institutions, right? Jordan, what do you think?
I mean, I think we've seen him already do these things and sort of sail through. Like, I don't know how much, I don't know what more he can say in public than like publicly contradict, you know, the American government's line in Ukraine and explicitly support Russia's position, essentially. Like, that's, yeah, it's kind of as bad as it gets for like an American military contractor. But, you know, he backtracked, he sailed through that essentially. In terms of like, if Twitter completely ruins him somehow, which I think is unlikely, ruins him to the extent that like SpaceX also goes bankrupt. You know, I think we'll probably be talking about a bailout for SpaceX because of how key it is to the American space program currently. And to its military ambitions in the near future as well. So, you know, whether at that point Musk would be forced to step out or whether he would remain CEO, I'm not sure. Like, I think, like, you know, the line is probably a lot further than anybody thinks or maybe hopes it would be for him. like, I don't really know how much worse it could get in terms of what he says publicly for it to be enough of an issue with the government that they take away his contracts. Financially, if he gets completely wrecked, that might be something else. I mean, who knows? Like, maybe we won't hear from Musk after that. But I think even in that case, you know, probably SpaceX will stick around.
Yeah, I think space, like, I could see him getting pushed out of SpaceX. Or, I mean, there are other reusable rocket companies. There's other places they could go. And if he becomes enough of a pain in the ass, I mean, you're not getting the same shit from Raytheon or Boeing or Lockheed, right? You don't have the same set of problems. Those people all get the game and they understand. You know, Musk is very interested in having a persona and letting it play out online in front of everyone. And I do think at a certain point that there might be pushback that sees him. I don't know. If you could have SpaceX and Starlink without having Musk, wouldn't you do it?
Yeah, I mean, never say never. It could happen, but I think it would be a self-inflicted wound, like a mortal self-inflicted wound at that point. And maybe he's headed in that direction. It certainly looks as though his decision-making is compromised and has already led to some very severe difficulties for him. Personally and business wise. But I mean, I don't know, like, we'll have to see. Like, I see SpaceX currently like being too important to let go. Like, you know, maybe even their tech, maybe SpaceX goes bust. They get bought for parts by, you know, Northrop Grumman or Lockheed Martin or Boeing. And maybe we never hear from Musk again. I don't know. It's tough to say. Maybe that'll happen. I mean, I'm sure we'll all see it happen on Twitter live in real time, and it'll be yet another round of entertainment / horror.
Tech Ghoul brings up another interesting point that I want to highlight here. I also think messing with Twitter is risk because it plays such an outsized role for politicians. How many overt enemies can one billionaire carry? A lot. I think billions of dollars buys you a lot of cover, but I also every time the Twitter conversation gets brought up, like, I have a lot of normal, extremely offline friends that think all of this shit is like, who cares? And I can't stress enough, Twitter is weirdly important because it is a place where, like, Zelensky can yell at Musk. It is a place where world governments can talk to each other. Yeah, all the journalists are on there, and we all are. I mean, Motherboard increasingly is off of it for various reasons, but it is a place where world governments are and talking, and it's kind of like that in Telegram. Ain't no one checking their Facebooks, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, it's funny to watch Musk sink this place, but it is an important social media space that does have a bunch of power users, right?
Yep. And I mean, the politics question is interesting when it comes to Twitter because, like, you know, this is political as well. Like, we talked about how with SpaceX and with Tesla as well, part of his, you know, insight or opportunism there has been to ride currents in American politics. And Twitter is the same thing. Like, in you know, bringing back Trump and by, you know, basically everything he's done, he is aligning himself with a powerful current in American politics. And that means politicians who are very much in favor of what he's doing and what he's saying. So the degree to which he's making political enemies on Twitter, like, obviously he is, but he's also aligning himself with a political current at the same time. And I think he is probably hoping that that wins out in the end in terms of, I mean, even the verification thing, like, you know, I think really what it comes down to is sort of backlash against journalism, like, not to make it like all about journalism or something, but when you think about like the blue checks, the hated blue checks, you know, this is like a group of people who are not famous in their own right. Let's say, like, when people say like, I hate blue checks, they're not thinking of Chrissy Teigen, you know, like they're thinking of like, a writer from some mainstream media outlet that has a blue check.
They're thinking about op-ed writers from The Atlantic.
Yes, exactly. Right? Who have a blue check because of, you know, their connection to journalism. And Musk has been very, very clear over the years how he feels about journalism in general and journalists. Like, basically, he sees journalists as having unearned authority to check him, basically.
Tell us about, he wanted Pravda.com?
Yeah. He wanted to, you know, one of his things that he said that never panned out was he wanted to start a website to like, for the public to like rank journalists and outlets by like trustworthiness. And, you know, this is obviously like part of the same thing with verification. It's just this same idea of like taking, journalism down a peg, because it inconveniences him, and brings to light facts that he doesn't like, or like, you know, facts are inconvenient to the right-wing cause in many cases. And it's very easy to see how the entire like mission with Twitter right now aligns with his rich buddies, his political buddies, politicians and wealthy people who maybe he's not personally friends with, but are part of this like general political current in America. Like, it is political, and like the politics of that represents like are ascendant, and the people who hold them have real power, and Musk is aligning himself with that, with the Twitter deal. So it's not so dissimilar from SpaceX and Tesla. It's just like in the opposite direction politically. And, you know, if you see electric cars as being a leftist cause, I don't know that it necessarily is, but it's definitely good for the planet.
It used to be. I don't know that it is anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Musk, right? But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because this is like, it's a similar thing. It's a similar game plan. Like, you know, following a political current, trying to reap the downstream rewards from it, and sort of running a company through brute force, you know, whether that's like disciplining labor or like vertical integration with SpaceX and Tesla, but maybe in Twitter, that's more in the sense of just like power flowing up to Musk. But we see these patterns like repeated over and over.
All right, I've got two more questions for you. And then I'm going to go eat lunch. Why do you think he has a cult of personality? Why do people like him so much?
I mean, you sort of mentioned this before, but like he's really just like this American ideal in a sense. Like whether or not it's 100% based in reality or whether it's just a fabrication of himself, plus like the culture that is ready to receive and support this type of person. But you know, people called him like Iron Man or like Tony Stark for a really long time. And like, there's something to that. Just in the sense that like his wealth and his ambition and his willingness to align himself with existing, currents of power or geopolitical trends, it gives him enviable superpowers to anyone in America. Like, you know, the fantasy of how many people who bought into sort of the right-wing line about social media and Twitter in particular, and, you know, the quote-unquote cathedral and all of these sorts of things, you know, it's a personal dream of theirs just to buy Twitter and destroy it or run it how they see fit. And someone who has the sort of brute force through the capital they control to be able to do that is like, you know, it's the quintessential like American, like it's as close as you can get to an American superhero in a world where Captain America doesn't exist because superpowers aren't real. But wealth is real and capital is real. And he's wielding that in ways that I think is like almost like an element of like fantasy fulfillment.
Emery Lee has a question or a statement that I think is really important. I want to highlight here. Iron Man and Tony Stark are fictional characters, which is true. But I think, and specifically in America, and I don't know how people outside of America feel about this, but like America is a very fictional and mythological place. Mm-hmm. And shit is like way more important than it probably should be here. And people have deep, abiding relationships with their mythology that transcends reason. I live in the South. That's all we do here. I don't know what your perspective on that is as a non-American, Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, for everyone listening, I'm Canadian. But we get a lot of American culture here. And yeah, you know, it's this mix of like myth and a culture that, you know, American culture produced superheroes. And there's a lot and like continues to sustain interest in superheroes. And a lot has been written about the sort of, you know, fascistic undertones of superheroes. And of course, there's the series The Boys, which is really about this. And Alan Moore goes on about this. Watchmen is about this. But so to the extent that America has these like mythological heroes that are sort of cultural archetypes that are like ultra powerful and somewhat authoritarian, you know, it's very easy to see how someone like Musk fits into that stream and can be like valorized by people who are, you know, primed to be receptive to that. Because superheroes speak to like real world things. Like The Boys maps so well and is so entertaining because it sort of casts superheroes more in reality and sort of picks at the real world dynamics that superheroes mythologize, but brings them back to earth in terms of like, you know, the issues with power and power imbalances and authority. And Musk really sort of, you know, it embodies that. He's in The Boys, but without superpowers existing. Like, it's just money. It's just wealth. It's just capital. It's ego. And all of that is just this like delicious soup for the American soul that has been primed for like, you know, decades or centuries of its existence to valorize these characters in this sort of mode.
All right. My last question. What do we risk by not taking this guy seriously? Why do we need to have conversations like this? Because we all like to dunk, we all like to make fun, but I think there's a danger there. Agree, disagree?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to think about Musk because you have to understand Musk to understand capitalism currently. Like, he's the richest man in the world. It's worth thinking analytically about his business decisions and what has really brought him here and what functions he serves and who has sort of enabled and boosted him, you know, where the benefits come from. All of that is really important to think about because if you're not thinking about it, then you're not understanding the real currents of economic and geopolitical power today, which Musk embodies. In addition to just being a source of endless, you know, schadenfreude and hilarity for all of us.
Jordan Pearson, thank you so much for coming on to Cyber and walking us through this. If you like the show and you missed a little bit of it, it is going to be available as a podcast a little bit later today. And it will, of course, continue to exist as a live stream on YouTube. If you want to catch the shows live and participate, please follow us on twitch.tv/motherboardtv or at youtube.com/motherboard. Follow us there. You'll be notified whenever we go live. And it's Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving week here in America. I don't think there's going to be another show this week. I may be wrong. I think we're gonna take some time off, and we'll be back next week with two more live streams all about the internet and the wonderful and horrible things that go on. We'll see you later.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyla Tsinis.
Kayla Itsinis. I'm Kyla Itsinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.